WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with us now, the new Speaker of the New York City Council, Corey Johnson, who we're going to do an ethnic reveal on here in just a minute, and who will take your calls at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you're still just getting to know his name after knowing Melissa Mark Viverito in that role and before her Christine Quinn, Johnson represents Chelsea and elsewhere on the Lower West Side of Manhattan. He is, among other things, the first openly HIV-positive city council speaker. And the lead story on Politico New York today is Corey Johnson getting sort of caught in the middle of the Cuomo de Blasio feuds over NYCHA public housing projects and the MTA. You'll remember that the governor said this about NYCHA's disrepair on our program last week.
NYCHA is wholly controlled by New York City.
And the next day, the mayor said this.
I've talked to him a lot of times about NYCHA. He does not evince a detailed understanding of what's happening there.
So said the mayor about the governor. Enter Corey Johnson. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Always happy to be here.
And I guess I should stop calling you the new speaker. That worked in January, maybe early February. Now we're, you know, in
mid-March. It's new. I still want a honeymoon. I don't want the honeymoon to end yet. It's only 10 weeks.
And people have talked about you as the first openly gay male and openly HIV positive speaker of the city council. But you and Joan Walsh were just talking as you were coming in and she was going out about all this Irish stand stuff. And you've got some Irish blood and you're part Korean.
Yes, my mom is 100% Irish. She's from a big Irish Catholic family, one of 10 kids. I have like 60 cousins. My biological father was born in Seoul, South Korea, to an American soldier stationed there for the war and a Korean woman. So he was 50% Korean. He was put in an orphanage, adopted by an American couple when he was 4 years old. And so I am 25% Korean. I am the Irish Korean gay, HIV positive, happy warrior speaker of the city council.
How come I haven't heard about this Korean part of you before?
You know, I don't know, but next time we can do the show from K-Town.
Maybe so. We'll meet over kimchi. On the news, the governor's office put out a statement about something you agreed to, but now you say you didn't. Do I have that right?
The governor's office sent myself and about 15 council members a letter talking about a meeting that we had with him in Albany on Tuesday on a variety of issues, the MTA, NYCHA, Rikers, education funding. And we did have a conversation in that meeting, though there was not an agreement on a path forward. We want to work with the governor. We want to work with the mayor. But we are an independent body. We're independent from the mayor. We're independent from the governor. And we are going to collectively do things to benefit the residents of New York City, NYCHA residents, and we're going to do it on the merits. So there are some ideas on how to move forward. Some of those ideas are, of course, I believe that NYCHA needs more money, but it also needs better management. So it's a combination of those things. The state has $200 million, which we want them to release. We want more money. The assembly put in its one house budget an additional $200 million. We need design build for NYCHA, which is an important thing, which would make it a more affordable project when you do repairs and when you reconstruct things, and it would speed up the process. It puts design and contracting into one thing and expedites things. So those are some of the things that we need for NYCHA. And we had a good long meeting with the governor, but I wanted to ensure that everyone knows that there is no final deal struck. We're going to continue to talk to both the governor and the mayor and all interested stakeholders.
So how did this happen? Politico Reports puts it that Johnson, you, was forced to disavow Davids, that's the governor's attorney, or his counsel, his comments in your own letter Wednesday night, last night, in which you declared that the agreement that the governor's counsel wrote of, which stated that you had agreed to add hundreds of millions of dollars in city funding for the MTA and would support hiring an independent contract to oversee repairs at NYCHA, did not exist. What happened there?
I think that the governor has strong feelings about what should happen with NYCHA, and we know that the governor and mayor have not agreed on NYCHA and Rikers and the MTA and some other issues. I just want to do things based on the merits. It's not personal with the mayor. It's not personal with the governor. I want to just get results for NYCHA residents and for New York City. And I am willing to work with anyone. I have a good working relationship with the governor. I have a good working relationship with the mayor. My job is to get things done and to represent this body and the members in a responsible way to get results on behalf of 8.6 million New Yorkers.
You have differed with the mayor on what the city should be willing to contribute to a quick fix fund for the subways, though with conditions. But you're in a different place from the mayor, right?
Yeah, I am open to the city putting in over $400 million as part of the proposed subway action plan that Chair Loda and the governor proposed last July when we had the summer of hell on the subways in New York City. And I support that because strap hangers need results and they need them right away. I understand, of course, that the city already contributes significantly, but I think most subway riders don't really care who comes up with the money. They just want results. And the subway action plan, I believe, is something that would achieve that in the short term. But there are strings attached. It needs to be in a lockbox. We need to have input and say on the subway action plan and how it should be modified. And we have to ensure that besides the subway action plan, which is $800 million in short-term repairs, track work, signal work, water damage work, we need a long-term plan for the subway. We deserve a 22nd century subway system like Shanghai and Europe, and we are nowhere close to having that. So it's the short-term subway action plan and a long-term plan to get the subways in a good state.
Are you putting a line in your proposed budget for that, for the city council and the mayor to negotiate for the next fiscal year, which begins in July? I think the mayor's budget line for additional for the MTA is zero.
Well, we're having our budget hearings right now. The month of March, the city council conducts preliminary budget hearings on all of the city agencies. Chairman Loda came in last week and testified on the subway action plan and on the MTA's budget. And we asked him a lot of questions about their plan and the details of that plan, which was important for the council to do. I am not going to preempt my colleagues in the council. We have a collective process. We have a budget negotiating team. We will all discuss this. I do think there's openness, not just from myself, but from members of the body, to come up with something if we believe that it will be in a lockbox without a key and that we'll see results in the short term for subway riders.
Lockbox without a key means they can't just raid it to use for other state functions.
That's correct.
Your colleague, Councilman Robert Cornegy from Brooklyn, was here lobbying the governor to declare a state of emergency for NYCHA and kind of take this from the city to a certain degree to expedite repairs in public housing projects. Do you support Cornegy's call?
It depends on what the state of emergency is tailored on. So there are a variety of things that the governor could put in a state of emergency. The thing that I asked him to do was to further waive procurement rules. Right now, procurement law makes it more difficult to actually pick a contractor, get the design done, and get the construction done. I am really proud that the city council, in its first major hearing, as me being speaker, exposed that 323,000 NYCHA residents were without heat and hot water since the beginning of the heat season on October 1st. And so we need to get folks heat and hot water as quickly as possible, not 4 winters from now, but by next winter. One of the ways we could do that is by getting design build authority, waiving procurement rules, getting additional capital funds in this fiscal budget by the state, and releasing the funds that the state put in a few years ago.
Do you think Cuomo is open to that?
I think Cuomo wants to work with the council and figuring out the best course of action. He was open to our ideas. I think he has some concern in wanting to know that the $200 million that the state put up a few years ago and any additional money, how it's going to be spent, how quickly it will be spent, will the repairs be done in an expedited manner? He wants to ensure that those things happen. I have similar concerns. I want to make sure the repairs happen as quickly as possible. And so I'm willing to work with the mayor, the governor, the leadership of NYCHA, and the residents to get them the repairs they deserve.
My guest is the New York City Council Speaker, Cory Johnson, who, as you heard, still likes being called the new speaker, so he can still have a honeymoon period. And Bobby in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, I'm calling about a guy by the name of Adam Mermelstein. He bought like 8 buildings here on Sanford Avenue, and he's displacing the tenants out of rent-controlled buildings. Now he's telling, he changed the lock on the front door, and he's put up this electronic key system. And he's telling the tenants here, which are mostly Chinese and Korean, that they have to have a New York State ID to get these new keys, new electronic keys. Is there anything somebody could do to help these people? Because most of them, they speak absolutely no English. And now he's telling them they need ID, New York State registered ID to get a key to the building.
Well, that's disturbing. I don't know, of course, the specifics, except for what you just told me, but I would encourage you to reach out to Councilmember Peter Koo's office, who is the council member for Flushing and who has staff that speaks in Mandarin and Cantonese and likely the dialect of the folks who are being affected by this. If you Google the name Councilmember Peter Koo, you can call his office today and they will be in touch with those tenants if you connect them to ensure that they get the services that they need. No one should be targeted because of their citizenship status, and we want to make sure that everyone gets the services that they need.
We can't, of course, confirm from this call that everything that he describes is actually happening, but if a landlord is asking for some kind of valid state issue ID in order for someone to keep their rent controlled, he said, maybe it's rent stabilized apartment, is that a violation of the law?
I don't know if it's a violation of the law. I think it depends on the issue. If it depends on trying to get a potential apartment, if you are trying to get into a new building or you're a new tenant in a building, I don't know what the law exactly says. But what we've seen recently with the ICE raids of 7-Elevens, with the targeting of high-profile immigration activists like Ravi Ragbir and other folks that have been involved in the sanctuary movement here in New York City, we've seen the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security spreading fear and trying to scare undocumented folks in a series of ways. The message we want to send is that New York City is a sanctuary city. We're going to remain a sanctuary city, and we want New Yorkers to feel protected, to be protected, and to know that city government is on their side.
Jeremy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. I wanted to ask Cory, when you were the health chair, you got a $100,000 feasibility study funded through the city council to look at the feasibility of safe injection facilities here, here in New York as a way of tackling our overdose crisis. So now the mayor has been quiet in releasing the study. I know that Brian asked about this just last week, so I wanted to hear from the speaker what he and the council are doing to push the mayor on this issue.
And the mayor is still looking at the idea, has not taken a position on safe injection sites as of our interview last Friday.
They need to release the study. There was a hearing done recently on the opioid crisis. that was chaired, co-chaired by Councilmember Steve Levin, who's the chair of the General Welfare Committee, which oversees the Department of Homeless Services, and Chair Diane Ayala, who chairs the Mental Health and Drug Committee in the council. And I, as you said, Jeremy, when I was chair of the Health Committee before I became Speaker, I am the one who advocated for the city to come up with the money to do this study. We know that this saves lives. Right now, we have an opioid crisis in New York City. Too many people are dying. And the fear-mongering that took place decades ago about needle exchange as it related to HIV and AIDS was not borne out by the facts. We save lives. We cut down on new infections. We know that the science shows that it is better for someone who is addicted to drugs to not be shooting up in a public park, in an alley, in the bathroom of a restaurant, and leaving dirty needles and not being connected to care. We want to treat addiction as a health crisis and not criminalize it. And so I want the mayor to release this study. I want us to come up with appropriate sites, and we know that this will save lives. So the council sent a letter to the mayor this past week saying, release the study, let's move ahead. You've taken far too long, and we will continue to push. We want to save lives.
Can I tack another drug use question onto that? Do you have a position on whether either the city, I don't know if a city can do it at the city level, or New York State should legalize recreational marijuana like New Jersey is now looking into?
I support full legalization of marijuana. I don't believe that the city has the authority to legalize it on its own. It's a state issue. I am sober. I've been sober for 8.5 years. July 13th will be 9 years sober for me. It's my biggest accomplishment. I got sober at the age of 27. I did use marijuana before I got sober. I didn't really enjoy it, but I used it. And for me, I believe that the impact that marijuana enforcement has had on communities of color has been devastating. There are many reasons why I think legalization makes sense. Number one, the criminal justice system right now is uneven and unfair to communities of color. Number two, you create an underground market for the drug that exists that you would get rid of if you regulated it. Number three, you would create jobs. Number four, you would create revenue. Number five, you would get rid of the interesting quality that young people think, oh, it's illegal, I can try to use it. You could do education. You could put money raised from marijuana sales into drug treatment. You could do a variety of things. Other countries have done it. Other states have done it. And New York State should catch up.
If you didn't like it, why did you use it?
Well, part of the reason why I needed to get sober was I did a lot of things that I don't think I actually enjoyed, but I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. I made poor choices and poor decisions, and I decided that it was time for me to try to live my life to my full potential, and I knew that drugs and alcohol were getting in the way of that. Anyone who is struggling with drug addiction and with alcoholism, you can get help. There is a way forward. I got sober at 27 years old. It's the best, most important thing I've ever done for myself, and I did it with the help of other people. Reach out, ask for help. There is a bright, infinite future ahead of you if you can get sober and the help you need.
Anita in Hamilton Heights. You're on WNYC with New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. Hi, Anita.
Hello, Corey. This is Anita. I'm a choreographer. I hope you don't mind if I feel that you are our speaker.
Oh, thank you, Anita.
But I'm calling you.
I noticed Anita is not
serious.
The first caller to feel like they're on a first-name basis with you.
Oh, thank you. And Anita, you're a choreographer. Let's go dancing sometime. I love to dance.
A choreographer.
Okay, so this is serious today. I'm so sorry. Are you aware of the foreclosure of almost 2,000 units of affordable homes, almost 80 buildings next month, mostly seniors and families of color? It's the largest single mass foreclosure on affordable homeowners in the city's history. Most of these are in Harlem, Washington Heights, South Bronx, and Bed-Stuy. At my last count, 26 council members have signed letters individually or in the group as members of the Black, Latino, and Asian caucus in support of stopping the foreclosure. Can you help us get a public hearing? Maybe a task force help these owners stay owners?
Anita, of course, this is disturbing to hear, and I'm glad that the colleagues of mine in the council have been in touch with you and other folks that are going to be affected by this. I do not want...
What's going on?
What'd you say, Anita?
Oh, it's just that there's so many things going on, and this is happening in a matter of weeks.
Who's your council member?
Mark Levine.
So reach out to Councilmember Levine. I am happy when I get back to the office today to speak to the housing and buildings staff at the council, see the letters that my colleagues have sent, and help folks that are being affected by this. Even if it's not in my district, we have to ensure that people stay in their homes. We have a homelessness crisis in New York City, 62,000 people in the shelter system last night, a homelessness crisis when it comes to children, 23,000 children under the age of 16 are homeless, 3,900 people unsheltered on the streets of New York City, many people in domestic violence homeless shelters, runaway homeless youth. We need people to stay in their homes. That comes from eviction prevention, but also in staving off foreclosures when they don't make sense and if there is something nefarious going on.
And that's the second call we've taken with a gentrification and pressure on stabilized tenants. Call in this segment so far, we had the one from Flushing, now Anita from Hamilton Heights. As the mayor well knows from his appearances here, we could take nothing but affordable housing questions and issues that people have in their lives all day, all night, if we wanted to do that. From what I've read, you won't give as much deference as Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito did to individual members of council on the mayor's proposed rezoning of their areas. You don't think your fellow council members are in the best position. I mean, you do think your fellow council members are in the best position to know if these proposals for more dense housing are good for affordable housing or will actually result in gentrification and pressure on tenants, even if they're well-intended. But are you going to give less deference to the individual members to have veto power?
No, there is member deference exists, and it should exist because members know their districts better than me and better than many folks in city government. But there is no veto. If a member is not being reasonable, and I think most members are, nearly every member is. If you look at the land use process, the ULURP process, when land use actions or neighborhood rezonings take place, 98% of them go through. They're negotiated with the community, they're negotiated with the borough president, with the community board, and a path forward is found. You look at East New York, you look at East Harlem, you look at the Jerome Avenue rezoning that took place just last week. It works in many instances. But there's one thing I want to say, Brian, on what you just said, gentrification. We have an affordability crisis plaguing the city of New York. The rent is too damn high, as everyone says. The cost of food is going up. Rents are soaring. The cost of goods are going up. Subway fares have gone up, and wages have remained stagnant or gone down. And many of the good new jobs that have been created are not high-paying jobs. So when we talk about affordable housing, yes, we need it. It's a paramount concern. But the other thing I would couple onto that is you don't just want to create affordable housing. You want to create better paying jobs. You want people to have a pathway to the middle class for economic upward mobility. Those two things are coupled together. 22% of New Yorkers are living in poverty. 22%. That's one in five people when you walk around the city of New York. 40% of New Yorkers are underemployed, who don't have the hours and the wages that they need. We have to do everything we can to build and protect and preserve affordable housing while at the same time being smart about economic development and how we create jobs for upward economic mobility.
So, and we're going to run out of time soon. Do you have new specific proposals along those lines? Do you feel like the mayor is focusing too much on, you know, the lowest wage issues, minimum wage, things like that, and isn't focusing enough on creating a lot of new higher wage jobs?
Well, the mayor announced a plan, not in this last State of the City, but a year before, wanting to come up with a jobs program where the average salary would be about $50,000. And we need to create more jobs. It's a funny thing that unemployment is at an all-time low. Tourism is up. The city economically is doing well. Our budget is $2 billion more than it was last year. there. And I, if I could just, you know, say this, I think there are four major institutions that provide the last shreds of a social safety net in New York City. The MTA, the most quintessential egalitarian thing about New York City, 6 million subway riders, 2 million bus riders. CUNY, the City University of New York, the way that a lot of young people of color end up getting a higher education and get a good job and stay in the city. The public hospital system, health and hospitals, 500,000 undocumented people. And then lastly, we need to, in NYCHA, 400,000 people live in NYCHA, which is affordable housing. We need to protect those institutions and ensure that our social safety net remains strong and robust while Washington's trying to cut it, while at the same time working on getting people upward mobility.
The New York City Council Speaker, Corey Johnson, whose own district is kind of the lower west side of Manhattan, now talking about citywide issues, now that he's been elected by his colleagues, Speaker of the City Council. Let's keep talking. Thank you so much for coming in.
Brian, I always love coming by, and you guys are in the district, your constituents.
That's right.